Okay, sorry, one more time. Welcome again. Thank you for joining me at this 5 o'clock session. I know it's late in the day, but I just want to let you know that this will be the best session at 5 o'clock that you had to choose from, so congratulations on making the best choice possible. My name is Scott Rubel. I'm a lead program manager on the Excel team, and I imagine all of you are facing a little bit of information overload today. Your brains are full, so just sit back, relax, and enjoy the presentation. Today's actually kind of a special day for us because this is the first public announcement that we're making for a new add-in to Excel called GeoFlow. And next week, we're actually spinning up a beta program, which all of you will have the opportunity to participate in if you'd like to. I'll show you additional details on that at the end of this presentation. All right, so I'm just curious, how many of you attended the Bon Jovi concert last night? Pretty good share of those. So this presentation will be just like that concert, as a stimulating and exciting, okay? However, I'm not going to do any singing. I might do a little dancing up here. The lighting show won't be as good. But other than that, it's going to be just like the concert. And for any of you who would like to form a mosh pit, come on up as you see fit up here. In case I fall off the stage, you can catch me, okay? All right, so GeoFlow. Basically, it's a 3D geospatial visualization tool that allows you to discover insights in your data and share the stories behind that data in unprecedented ways relative to that of traditional 2D visualizations and tabular data sets. We have two primary pillars, one around exploration and storytelling. With respect to exploration, we give you the facilities to navigate through your data to find the trends, patterns, and outliers in that data, and then to tell the story behind it. So what we mean by that is being able to capture those insights as you proceed through discovering various things, and then being able to play those back through time and share those with a broader audience in a scripted manner, such that other people understand the path that you took to those. Okay? So with GeoFlow, it all started with the Worldwide Telescope. This is a project that came out of Microsoft Research. Have any of you heard of the Worldwide Telescope? No? Kind of see a few nodding heads. This is a project which is being used by the academic community to display solar systems, universes, asteroid belts, and things like that. It basically allows you to create a 3D universe and fly through it as if you're fixed to some type of rocket going through the asteroid belts and the solar systems. And it's proven to be quite an interesting use of technology and education. It's got a rabid following, around 5 million users. And about a year ago, Microsoft Research started talking to the product teams, which is where I'm from, and we started brainstorming around ways in which we could take this technology and bring it to the masses in a product form. So we spent about 6 months exploring various scenarios. We stripped away all the universe aspects, like the asteroid belts and the galaxies and stuff like that, and narrowed it down just to the Earth, because for the most part, most business activities take place on the Earth, at least for today. And we came up with a lot of interesting use cases and things like that. So we formed basically a business model around this and proceeded forward with building out an actual product that I'll be showing you here today in my demos. We designed it such that it could be used by a wide variety of people. But in terms of the reasoning behind why we felt there was a need for GeoFlow, at the risk of stating the obvious, data sets are getting larger. There's GFI devices, there's GPS units. These things are becoming so much less expensive, and they're all over the place. So there's just an explosion of data in this area. Right now in the industry, there are other mapping solutions, but a lot of these tend to be on the higher end. They tend to be fairly expensive and difficult to use, so that you have to actually take a training class. So what we're attempting to do here is bring this capability to the masses. Lower the bar, give you a basic set of capabilities such that pretty much anybody in your organization can leverage this wonderful technology and solve real business problems without a lot of difficulty. In terms of the users that we are going after relative to this, we understand that there's the basic information worker who tends to have the skills around getting the data, exploring it, analyzing it, developing insights around that data set. But a lot of times there's a handoff to somebody else within the organization, such as a decision maker or manager who needs to take that and present it to a larger audience and personalize it and tell the story behind the data. So we're really targeting those two ends of the spectrum. However, I will tell you that this applies to many more folks in your organization. Let me just tell you a personal story of mine. When we were putting this project together about a year ago, I was sitting down at the kitchen table working through one of my demos, and my youngest son, who was about 10 at the time, came over and said, "Hey, what are you working on?" And I was telling him, "So, oh, this is this new project," I was plotting Xbox sales on the globe. And all of a sudden, his interest peaked. He's like, oh, Xbox sales. And I says, oh, can I see what's going on? And I showed him how to navigate around the 3D environment. And I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. So he started playing around with the data set and started forming hypotheses and ideas around, like, why the data was structured in certain ways. And then his other older brother came in and said, oh, what are you doing? And within a couple minutes, they basically pushed me aside and started working with the tool. About 20 minutes later, I had to tell them to stop it because I had to get ready for my presentation. But it was just kind of interesting. They started forming various hypotheses, which is a normal course of progression when you're doing these type of analytic activities. And they came up with some of their own theories. So for example, they saw a big clustering of Xbox sales in the New York area. Thought, maybe that's because too many people over there are, the crime rate in New York is higher because too many people are playing Grand Theft Auto. So they derived their own conclusions. Obviously, it's not based on any real data, but that's just part of the discovery process that you get into as you start to unravel some of the data that you see in these analyses. All right. So what I want to do now is get into an actual demonstration of GeoFlow. And what we did was we worked with the Seattle Art Museum to make sure that we were designing the tool set around real people, real scenarios, real challenges that people face in the industry. One of the challenges they face is this comment around they're data rich but analysis poor. They've got gobs and gobs of data, but they just don't know how to tie it all together and make real decent business decisions around it. They also can get their hands on most tools out there. It's a matter of just finding the right ones, but they just didn't have the expertise, nor should they have to have the expertise to use a lot of these things. I'm just curious, do you guys face a similar problem in your organizations in terms of just having lots of data and not necessarily the expertise to analyze all of it? Okay, see a few nodding heads. All right, so let me switch over to my demo here. What we're looking at is actual data that we got from the Seattle Art Museum. These are ticket sales of the Picasso exhibit that took place back in the 2010 timeframe. And what we're looking at is, 65,000 rows of data, which by big data standards isn't necessarily big data, but it's a reasonable size. We can actually go up to a million rows and possibly even higher, depending upon if you have 64-bit, enough RAM, and things of that nature. But for the demo purposes, it's around 65,000. The data involves sales date, sales type, if they're a member or non-member. So one of the key things for museums is, for them to stay in existence, they really need donors. And so people start out as a non-member. They need to convert those people into members, and then ultimately convert members into donors. That's their kind of their lifeblood for staying in business. So whenever they have an exhibit, they want to try to capitalize on the sales of their tickets and convert those people to members and then on to donors so that they can capitalize and get more value out of that. Here we also have ticket type, actual price, and then zip code. All right, so as I mentioned, GeoFlow is an add-in to Excel. I've installed that. It shows up as this 3D map icon. I simply click Explore in 3D. That grabs the data and loads it into the X-Velocity engine. This is the same engine that powers PowerPivot, PowerView, and is embedded in Excel. Okay, so that gives us the ability to scale up to very large data sizes. As I was mentioning earlier, we can do about a million rows right now in our current beta form, but because it's in the X-Velocity engine, we can go to hundreds of millions, potentially even billions of rows, depending upon the size of your hardware that you have backing up this data set. All right, so now that I'm in GeoFlow, basically it pops a separate window over the spreadsheet, and I can begin to explore this in three-dimensional space. As you can see, this is a 3D globe, and what I want to do is plot my zip code. So I'll go ahead and map it. And what this does is takes that zip code information and sends it off to Bing to do the geocoding. So we can handle pretty much any type of address information that Bing can handle. It could be a zip code, street, state, country, things of that nature. So it goes through the process. All right, there you go. Yeah, feel free to applaud at any time. So we have our locations relative to our ticket sales. One of the first interesting insights is, wow, they sell a lot of tickets outside of just the Seattle area. I mean, the Seattle Art Museum is a nice-sized museum, but they have a pretty broad reach. In fact, if I showed you the entire data set, it expands the entire North American area, and there's some interesting pockets of activity. All right, so I've got my locations here. Next, I want to start to do a little bit of analysis. And what we try to provide is a very fluid way of switching between different views because your brain reacts to them in different ways. So let's go ahead and take a look at a heat map view of that data set. So I can get a little bit better sense of where those tickets are occurring, but it's only showing me the tickets with respect to the location. What I want to do is really understand the magnitude of sales taking place in each one of those zip codes. So let's go ahead and put on the attendance value, and right away I can see there's a hot spot right in the Seattle area. Not too surprising, it is the backyard of the museum, but nonetheless it was kind of interesting to see that there's other pockets of activity in the outlying areas as well. We provide a variety of different themes for people to look at the data, and I've got one theme here which turns on my labeling. We typically turn off the labeling so that it doesn't obscure the actual data that's being shown on the map. So I can see that we got some activity over in the Spokane area, we've got some Vancouver activity, and that in Seattle. All right, so as I was mentioning, this tool is about both exploration as well as storytelling. And what we mean by storytelling is giving you the actual ability to capture your insights along your journey so that you can replay those back to yourself as well as share those with others. So the first step along here is I want to create a new tour. A tour is basically our way of stringing together these scenes that we found interesting bits of information that I can then package up into a complete whole. So I took my first snapshot there, and then I can continue on my exploration. So what I'd like to do now is zoom in on the Seattle area here. As you can see, it's a very fluid interaction model. Everything updates in real time. We're going against the Bing service, and we're pulling down the various tiles, which we stitched together in this 3D environment. All right, so I've got my layout here. The heat map's great for certain things. Sometimes it's not so good for showing distinct areas. So if I want more of a distinct look, I can turn on my bubble chart. You see kind of different areas more predominantly, such as over in the Hood Canal and down south. So I'm going to take another snapshot of this scene. All right, so that's all fine and well. Let me keep zooming in on the Seattle area, because I've got this big blob of interesting activity in that particular region. I'm going to tilt the horizon a little bit. The one problem with bubbles is that there tends to be a lot of occlusion or clumping of things. So what I'd like to do now is actually show this in a three-dimensional space. So let's go over to my column chart. And as you can see right away, I can see the outliers that take place with respect to this data set. And I can pan around, change my perspective to get a better feel for some of those outliers. And through this motion parallax, I can get a better sense as to the height of the bars or pass my cursor over them to understand the exact value. But I can definitely see a concentration in this area. One of the other things I'd like to do is switch some of the themes around, just kind of varying my style a little bit, give a different perspective on stuff. Ultimately, though, I want to understand why is there this spike? Because as an organization, I want to spend my limited marketing dollars as best as I can so that I can target those people that are of greatest value to my organization. So let's go ahead and zoom in on this particular area and try to better understand why this might be spiking in this particular spot. What I'm going to do is turn on my aerial view of that and zoom right down to the waterfront. So for those of you who are familiar with Seattle, we've got a nice little waterfront area with a Seattle Aquarium, and then you can see the rooftops of these various buildings and see the street names. And as it turns out, this particular area is the main ticket office where they are selling the tickets. They offered both online sales and on-premise sales, but for whatever reason, they decided to shut down the online sales 2 weeks prior to the opening of the exhibit, which then forced people to go to the main ticket office to buy their tickets, and that produced huge, long lines. People are around the corners of the building and stuff like that. So that's why we're probably seeing this spike, but I can further confirm that by turning on the ticket type. Oops, not that one, sorry. Sale type. So I can confirm right off the bat online versus on-site sales, and this big green portion does confirm that in fact these were on-site sales. So just tucking that away for future events, I would probably want to keep my online ticket sales open for a longer period of time, and that would improve my customer satisfaction ultimately for my overall goal of converting non-members to members, then on to donors. All right, so that's a kind of an interesting insight. Let me go ahead and back up a little bit and label this particular data point. So we'll put main ticket office. This is a 3D label, so as I pass my mouse over it, it lights up that spot. But as I pan around, it always faces forward, so you can always read that label. Okay. I'm going to take another snapshot of this scene, so it builds up the story that I'm trying to ultimately convey to other people in my organization. All right, that's all fine and well. Let me back out a little bit here, and I want to look at a different aspect of my data, which involves the actual members versus non-members. So I'm going to turn off ticket sales and turn on member, non-member. And I'm going to change my theme such that it doesn't compete with the overall background. And I'm looking for areas now that have a good concentration of non-members as well as members, because members help pull through the non-members for making them future participants in that organization. So I can see there's a few areas. In fact, let's turn on the labels once again. You can see we've got Bainbridge here, which has a pretty good concentration of member and non-member, as well as Mercer Island. So let's zoom in on that a little bit, and I can actually read off the values for those. So pretty good distribution there. From a marketing perspective, those would be reasonable areas to target with limited marketing dollars. And because they're both islands, they probably have similar traits involved. People tend to take ferries and things like that, or they may have similar commute paths and things where I can leverage that type of campaign. So let's go ahead and back up a little bit here and take another snapshot. Another thing that is really powerful about this type of analysis is I can begin to overlay additional types of data, such as demographics, age, interests, population densities, things like that. So I can begin to correlate, hey, you know, is this an interesting area or not? So with respect to the ticket sales, one thing I want to make sure is, like, does this island have enough people on it to even warrant my effort of targeting them with my marketing campaign? So I'm going to go back to my spreadsheet here, and I already have a tab for population densities in the Seattle area. So let's go ahead and insert that into my GeoFlow. And what I can do now is turn on the zip code. So I'll go ahead and map that. It'll go ahead and geocode those various areas. It's sometimes a little hard to see. These are the pink areas on top of those various points. And then I'll turn on population density. Okay, so that puts those in. Now you can see that there's a bit of occlusion taking place because it's in the same exact place as the other things. But I can change the visualization type to something different so there isn't as much occlusion. So let's in this case go with a heat map. Now there's still occlusion going on, but I can go to my layer menu or manager and turn off layer 1 so that I can more easily see the various regions and their populations. Okay? And what I can tell fairly quickly is there's not a strong correlation between population density and the number of ticket sales, with the exception of the downtown area of Seattle. So for example, in the outer lying areas, such as in this spot, there's a high concentration of people, but not very much ticket sales. As far as Bainbridge goes and Mercer Island, they've got respectable population sizes, so it seems reasonable to spend my marketing dollars in those areas to try to beef up the people involved in that. So let's go ahead and take another snapshot of this. All right. Okay, and let me turn on layer 1 again. What I'd like to do now is take a look at temporal patterns in my data. This is another one of the strengths of GeoFlow, in that we can handle temporal data very fluidly. So in this particular case, I'm going to turn off layer 2. We're just going to take a look at the downtown area. I'm going to turn on the date by which the tickets were sold. Sale date. And now I can take a look at when the tickets actually were sold to customers. Don't worry about the jumping around right here. It's just repainting the screen. One thing I forgot to mention is, you know, this is in beta form. Basically, we are halfway through the product development process. So if there are a few glitches like that, it's just part of the natural development process. Okay, let's go ahead and play our data over time. And we can see when the tickets are actually getting purchased. Time goes on. Again, this is over a 3-month period of time, starting in early August, going to the end of October. You see there's not very much activity happening in the first 2 months. It starts to pick up at the beginning of October, and then it really accelerates toward the mid to latter part of the month of October. And I can scrub back over this just to kind of quickly see where that spike really takes place. So ultimately, what this tells me is people waited to the very end to buy their tickets. So again, from a marketing standpoint, I might choose to have campaigns happening earlier in the process, getting people out there buying tickets sooner, maybe having higher discounts and stuff like that, and tapering off towards the end. So I was able to capture quite a few insights along my journey of this analysis. And Right now, we're kind of in an exploratory phase. We will be providing additional capabilities that targeted more the analytics side. So as an example, as I was going through this, most of this was visual inspection, kind of seeing the height of the bars, using motion parallax to get a better sense as to the difference in the bars. In terms of the analytics side, we allow you to actually create a 2D bar chart of these various regions so I can compare more, do more of a direct comparison of the bar heights, and then you can actually then apply statistics and things of that nature. All right, so I've done my analysis here. What I'd like to do now is share this analysis with other people in my organization. Along the way, I've added a title for my main ticket office. I also have the ability to add titles for other regions, such as the Bainbridge opportunity here. So let's go ahead and add a text box. And then I have some text already written up. Create that. And so this is a little bit different type of label. It basically floats over the map and allows you to put a larger amount of information that clarifies the particular intent of this visualization. So let's go ahead and save that as part of the tour. Okay, so I've got the various parts of my tour, and I'm going to go ahead and play it back so you can see how this looks. So I've got the initial opening scene where it shows the concentration of activity in Seattle, shows the various concentrations. I switch over to my aerial view to understand the spike in activity that took place. I found that Bainbridge was an interesting opportunity to focus some of our energy. I pan back out to make sure that the population densities are appropriate for the use. And that's basically the synopsis of my analysis. All right, thank you. Now that I've done the analysis, I've packaged this up, I can then send it to other people in my organization. When we create this, it gets embedded in the Excel file, so I can push this out to a SharePoint site. I can also save this as a video file. So in the event that other people don't have the add-in installed or the latest build of Office, you can generate a video file, which is the same type of animation and play, and send that to a broader audience. Our roadmap will get us to a point where we can provide this on the web directly. We're just not there yet because we're still in the development process.
Can you record your voice as animation or annotation
as you're sure. The question was, can you record your voice as you're building out this tour? The answer is yes. It's not in the product just yet, but you'll be able to annotate this with a music track, your voice, or whatever you'd like. And we'll also be providing richer capabilities around the annotation part of that. One of the unique aspects of this isn't just that it's a video playing from beginning to end. What's interesting about this is it is an interactive experience. So have you ever been in a situation where it's like, oh, yeah, that's really interesting, but I've got a different question for you. I'm not really interested in the thing you're showing me right here. I'm really interested in Spokane, as an example. And so a lot of times in those situations, it's like, oh, you know, you're fumbling a little bit, and you have to go dig out some other data and things like that. This is interactive. So I can simply pause this tour and then zip over to Spokane or back out. Oh, there's Spokane. There's a few ticket sales over there. And then once we have that discussion, talk about the nature of those activities, I can then resume playback from where I last left off and continue on with the tour. So it's highly interactive, immersive in that nature. Okay? Sure.
So a scene is not a screen print. It's just basically a collection of coordinates at that moment in time. But you can still scroll interactively through every single...
Yeah, so the question was a scene. As you saw, let me back out to the original point here. The scene that I was taking isn't just a snapshot in time. What the scene is a packaging up of all the properties about that particular view, the angle of the camera, the data that's appearing on the screen, the type of visualization, and then that's defined in that segment or scene, and those are stitched together as we build out the tour, and we tie them together in a seamless 3D cinematic fly-through. We'll also be providing the ability for more cinematic like orbit effects, so you can kind of pan around a particular geography, so it's not just a one-point view and moving on, okay? All right, so that's just an end-to-end example of, sure. The question is, can you embed the time-lapse animation into the tour? So are you talking about the actual playback head showing the time that transpires? So as an example, when I was on this view, if I turn on the date, actual sale date. Are you talking about this timestamp here? Yeah, so again, we're in beta form, and not everything's quite working the way we want. When you pop up the tour, which is the full screen view, we'll have a counter, which will show you the actual time sequence that is transpiring during the playback time, okay? All right, so I showed you an end-to-end experience with the Seattle Art Museum. What I'd like to show you now is a sampling of a wide variety of other types of scenarios, just to give you a flavor for the flexibility of this tool. It's not just about ticket sales, as an example. So let's jump over to a different data set. All right, what we're looking at here are Seattle 911 calls. I'm going to go ahead and insert my GeoFlow. Grabs the data, brings up my 3D environment, and in this particular case, I already have latitude and longitude. Go ahead and map that. And I'm going to put on the type of call. All right, so this is real Seattle 911 calls. For those of you who aren't that familiar with Seattle, we have two bridges that connect the east side to the west side. This is I-90 and 520. Looks like someone had a car accident out on the bridge, which caused all kinds of problems with traffic. But I can begin to pan around and see different perspectives of the data. And then I can actually do this over time. So we'll play this over time. And you see the buildup of various events with respect to 911 calls. There are a wide variety of different controls we give you as the temporal control of things. In terms of the time settings, what I have right now is time accumulation. So things are basically building up over time. We also give you the ability to set as instant or persist last. Instant basically means it just flashes on the screen and disappears. And then persist last means it goes on the screen, unless there's something else that replaces it, it stays on the screen. Depending upon the story you're trying to tell or the analysis you're trying to do, each of these have different purposes for that. What's unique about this is, or interesting about it, is that the number of 911 calls actually mirrors the Seattle skyline. That's because there is a correlation between the population density and the number of 911 calls. Okay? All right, so let's move on to another example. And this time, let's look at Hurricane Sandy. So in this case, I've already got a tour that I generated, and I'm just going to start right off the bat with the tour. You'll see a listing of the tours that I've created, or you've created, in your drop-down here. Now, with Hurricane Sandy, this was the largest Atlantic hurricane on record, and unfortunately, it was the second most expensive in terms of hurricane damage. It started out as a tropical storm, picked up speed quite rapidly, hit a top speed of 105 miles per hour around Florida Panhandle, dropped a little bit of steam going north, but then eventually curved in and slammed into the eastern seaboard, causing an average of $20 billion. So it's kind of a traumatic example, but it's very visually engaging, and I can label this in a variety of different ways to kind of compel the audience to take action or take note of the particular story that I'm trying to tell. All right, so that's Hurricane Sandy. Let's move on to another data set. Credit card complaints. Any idea where the most number of credit card complaints happen? Which state? Anybody?
Delaware.
I'm sorry?
Delaware.
Delaware. Nope. Any other guesses?
California.
Good idea. No?
Vegas.
Possibly. Let's take a look. So again, I've got a tour that's already been saved. I'm just going to bring that up. And notice any oddball things? Florida. No, it's not Disney. But again, this is an interactive tour, so you want to take a look, closer look. You can zoom in on that particular region. And keep going down. Oh, you know, the type of problem is identity theft, fraud, or embezzlement. And Boca Raton is the location of highest magnitude in the entire country by far. So it's kind of an interesting thing that you may not have known. All right, let's go back. All right, next data set. All right, I didn't want to disappoint anybody. I've got election data. I think we all remember who won the election, but let's just take a look at some of the data I've got stored for that. Okay. In this particular case, I have data that spans 2000 all the way up to 2012, and showing an animation of how the Democratic and Republican population changed for each of the respective states. As you can see over time, the bubble shifting around a little bit. What's a little bit more interesting is when you take a look at the electoral votes, which is the purple column shooting up through the center of each of the pies. So a lot of times you'll see this, you know, a lot of red in the mid part of the country, which is the Republican vote. But because the population density isn't that high, they don't have as many electoral votes. So it's one way of explaining to people not as familiar with our electoral process why, you know, certain presidents get elected. They could win the popular vote but still lose the election because of the electoral college. So it's just an interesting perspective, a different way of telling the story around how we elect our presidents. You see California, for example, has a huge number of electoral votes, as well as Texas and a few other places like that. So those are the ones that, you know, really have a big impact on the election process. All right, so, you know, this is all fine and well, but to be honest with you, I'm a little tired of looking at red and blue states and stuff like that. I imagine a lot of you are probably more interested in knowing about the marijuana vote that took place in Washington State. So let me show you how that turned out. In Colorado too? All right. Okay, so let's go in and turn on my tour for the marijuana vote. All right. So I'm just going to pause this right here and kind of talk through some of this. You can see the number of yeses were in green, number of noes are in red. As it turns out, there's only a few counties within Washington that were really different from the rest. Most of the outlying counties voted about the same in terms of who were for or who were against the marijuana vote. But in Pierce County, King County, which is basically the Seattle area, Snohomish, and Spokane, those are the ones that were more of the swing votes. You can see that Seattle has a huge number of votes. It really much pushed the tide in favor of the marijuana votes. I'm hearing that a lot of people are considering vacation homes now in the Seattle area. All right, so another thing that's interesting about this is when you overlay the Democratic versus Republican vote. So I put on another data set which shows the distribution in pie chart form of who are the primary Democratic or Republican vote of things. So you can see in the Seattle area is primarily Democratic, same with the Snohomish and Pierce County areas. Spokane was a little bit different and they're more predominantly the Republican side of things. Some of you may also be thinking that I might be smoking something, giving my color choice of these pie charts. The fact of the matter is that the colors are selected randomly by the application right now. We will give you the control over those colors in a later build. Currently, it is just a matter of the sequencing of events. You don't have that capability. So don't be disturbed by some of the freaky colors you might get with playing around with the geoflows. All right. Yes, that is true. It just so happened it turned out that way, but I can't take credit for the green end. Red in that case. Okay, so we've been talking about some pretty serious stuff here. Hurricanes, elections, credit card complaints, stuff like that. You can also have a lot of fun. And as you start to explore various data sets, it can be kind of addictive. So I want to show you another data set. So what's other than gambling, what is Vegas well known for? Shows, okay. Yeah, that too. What else? Crime, okay. Weddings. I'm sorry?
Weddings,
yes, that's what I was looking for. Marriages. There's a chapel downstairs. In fact, you probably can get a discount given that you're part of the convention. So, you know, we're going to try that out. But yes, weddings are definitely one of the big things that Las Vegas is known for. So let's go ahead and take a look at that. I have wedding information dating back to the 1990s. Let's see, and this is based on U.S. Census information. What's interesting about this is, so let me just pause this real quickly here. So there's Nevada, and what we're doing is picking the centroid of the state. So that's why it's in the center of Nevada. It's not just that spot is the highest. It's most likely Las Vegas is the highest spot, but we just pick the centroid of the particular location. So this is marriage rate. It's calibrated relative to population size. So There are other areas that have more weddings, but given the number of people who live here, this has certainly the highest rate. But let's go ahead and play this over time. So as I mentioned, I've got basically a decade worth of information on marriage rates in the U.S. So let's go ahead and play this. And we can see, whoa, what happened when Nebraska just shot up in the 2005 timeframe, but then Nevada steamed back. It briefly showed on the right-hand side, let me pause this for a second here. It briefly showed on the right-hand side that New Hampshire was also a very popular place for getting married. So it's kind of an interesting aspect of that Nebraska was a place that you wouldn't expect necessarily to have a high marriage rate, but in fact it does. I'd stared at the data, the tabular data, for hours and never pulled that out until I actually threw it in the tool and saw that spike took place in time. All right, so the one question that a lot of people haven't asked yet, though, is what about, why is the marriage rate so high in Las Vegas? Any theories on that?
It's easy to get divorced.
Yeah, that's actually true. Back in 1931, when they invented this marriage economy, it was one of the easiest places to get divorced as well. Any other theories?
Alcohol?
Well, yeah, it probably contributes to it a little bit. Okay, any others? No? Okay, well, I have my own theory. It involves extraterrestrials. Okay. So I went out to the web, which is a very reliable source of data of this nature, and pulled out all the UFO sightings in North America and plotted this, overlaid the data on top of the marriage rate data. And lo and behold, let me just pull this up. There's a bug in the software right now, so I'm just going to show you a picture of the end state of this. But it's basically going to show you a heat map of all of the UFO sightings. So here's Las Vegas, notice that, and take a look at Los Angeles, and then here's Phoenix. Look at that. We basically have the Bermuda Triangle of extraterrestrial activity going on here. So I think there's clear evidence to suggest that when aliens travel, they land in those respective places. Las Vegas also has the highest concentration of hotel rooms anywhere in the world. So you can imagine after a long interstellar travel, they want to stop someplace, take a break, get ingrained in the society. So what better way to stop in Las Vegas, get married, and, start a family? And that would also explain a lot of the things in Las Vegas, like all the Elvis sightings and things like that. Okay? All right. So let me back out of this. We'll get back over to GeoFlow. Okay, so let's take a look at one last thing here. All right, so when I arrived on Sunday, I took a taxi from the airport, and the taxi cab driver dropped me off at the hotel. He's very nice. Said, have a good day, and by the way, don't get in any trouble. I was like, what do you mean, get in trouble? I mean, I was a little offended at the time. It's like, every time I've been here, I walk on the street, they're very nice people. They're always trying to sell me something of interesting entertainment options. I will admit, I grew up in a small town. We had two stoplights. One was a flasher. But in my own defense, I have watched plenty of episodes of Reno 911, so I think I'm well equipped to deal with Las Vegas. But after thinking about it a bit, I thought maybe I should take his advice a little more seriously. So what I did was I went out to the Los Angeles Police Department website, and I scraped the last 60 days of crime data off their site and threw that into the tool. So this is the part of the presentation where you might want to take notes, especially if you're going out tonight, so that you can avoid some of the hot spots. But then again, if you're looking for some action, this would also be another interesting aspect of it as well. All right, so let's take a look at what we have here. All right. Let me pause that. Let me back out a little bit, give you a perspective on what we're looking at here. Here's the airport. Here is Mandalay Bay. This is where we're at. For the most part, it's fairly quiet in our neighborhood, with the exception of maybe some stolen vehicles and stuff like that. The airport, you just have to worry a little bit about car accidents and whatnot. When you go a little bit further north on Las Vegas Boulevard, however, things get a little bit more exciting. It's up by the Monte Carlo, the MGM. Caesar's Palace. You can see there's quite a bit of additional crime activity. We've got some assault and battery. We've got some narcotics activity. That's this purple band here. A bunch of stolen vehicles. Let's see. You know, so, yeah, there's a lot of things going on in that neck of the woods. So just keep that in mind as you're walking around tonight. This stretch of Seattle Boulevard, or excuse me, the Las Vegas Boulevard is a little bit more rough. Okay, so there's actually a lot of practical uses for GeoFlow. Everything from analyzing different marriage patterns to crime data to a variety of other things. I'm going to switch back to my slide deck here. Sure. Ah, good question. The question is, are you able to filter this data? And the answer is, coming soon. In our beta, we have not implemented that capability just yet, but it is something that is in the next queue of things to get done. So, yeah, there's quite a few things like that. Sure.
KML vials?
So KML vials, we're debating if we're going to support that or not. At this point, we're not going to. However, we can talk offline and discuss that a bit more. All right. Back to my slide deck here. So as I was saying, there's several pillars to the GeoFlow. We have mapping the geospatial data. We have discovering your insights. And I'm just curious, have any of you gone to the Shark's Reef Aquarium? No? It's a really cool place. You can actually walk in a tunnel underwater and see the fish really up close and the sharks and stuff like that. So it's kind of like GeoFlow without the sharks, of course, where you can actually get up close with your data and walk or swim through the data itself. So it's a very unique way of experiencing and a very immersive aspect of the data set. Sure, was there a question back there?
Yeah, is this application concerned
services? Could you say that one more time, a little bit louder? So the question is, can this application consume data from a web service? Is that right? Yes. So as it stands right now, the data needs to be an Excel spreadsheet. That data can be connected to any particular online service through Excel, but right now we're taking it directly from Excel. But we do have a roadmap whereby you could connect to online data sources and get real-time data and things of that nature. It's just not in the product at this point in time. Okay. The next pillar was around sharing stories, where I could capture a bunch of my insights, package them in such a way with rich annotation, and then play them back to a larger audience. Some of the unique strengths, obviously the 3D geospatial is one of those aspects of it. The temporal data is another one where we're trying to really focus on some of the interesting dimensionality in that regard. And then guided tours, so I can define the path by which someone takes through my data, but they can also branch off and answer their own questions if they so choose. All right, as I try to show through the variety of examples here, there's a lot of different interesting use cases. Sales performance, distribution of crime, disease control, weather patterns, how marriages correlate with UFO sightings, you know, all kinds of things of that nature. Release plans. So, as I mentioned, this is an Excel add-in. It will be a web download available roughly in the spring 2013 timeframe. We're about halfway through the product development process. This will be a free add-in to the Pro Plus or O365 subscription. And we are spinning up a beta starting next week. You might want to write down this address. It's a GeoFlow beta request at Microsoft.com. For anybody interested in participating in the beta, just send us a request of that nature to that address. We'll ping you back with a few questions and get you into our beta program. We're looking to try to expand our beta program to involve a lot more folks trying to solve real business problems to make sure that we're designing the product in a way that really addresses those particular needs. All right. So with that, our mission really is to transform data into fluid 3D stories, unlocking new insights for everyone. I'd like to open it up for any questions that you may have. Sure. Question is, are we going to support custom maps and custom coordinate systems? In our V1 release of the product, our plan is not at this time, but that's definitely on our roadmap for a future release. Sure.
Will the tour-like experience that you showed be able to move over into PowerPoint?
So the question is, will the tour-like experience be able to be ported over into PowerPoint, was it? Okay. So what we're planning to do in V1 is to give you the ability to export a video directly into a PowerPoint presentation. so that it's a matter of just like a save as operation. But the actual tour, the interactive aspect, would still have to be done in Excel. You'll have the video as a fallback on that. Okay, sure. Sure. Yeah, the question is, can you actually color the states or have custom polygons and things of that nature? Again, we are planning that as part of the first release. That will come in about two of our milestones in the future. So our hope is to actually have that in place by the time the product is available in the spring of 2013. I need to caveat all this, however, with the fact that because this is not a released product, all of what I'm saying is subject to change. We're divulging this with best intentions, but we also want your feedback as well. The nature of this project is such that we're very agile, and we've actually changed our direction several times to accommodate the needs of customers and making sure that the right feature set is put in place. Sure, all the way in the back. Question is, do we support other typologies such as line segments and closed regions? At this point with our V1 product, we don't have plans for that. However, again, that is on our roadmap for a future release. Sure. What format for lat long? We support all the formats that Bing supports. And you know, to be honest with you, I don't know all the support things that Bing does, but they're pretty robust. Sure, do you have a question? Yeah, if you're not in the United States, will you see something or will it be different? The answer to that is yes and no. Depending upon where you live, there are certain geographies that we basically can't render any maps. It's a geopolitical issue. There are other parts of the world where we may render a map, but it may have a fuzzy border. Again, this is all kind of left up to Bing. They're providing the service for rendering all these environments. That will be coming in a future release of the product. Right now, it's not there in our beta. Okay. Sure.
What's your plan for SharePoint? Will you support information lists?
Yep. So the question is, what is our plan for SharePoint? Will you support lists and things of that nature? Absolutely. In our V1, we're basically trying to get this out as quickly as we can to validate the concepts and things of that nature. We still need to deliver on the web side of things and integrate this into SharePoint, and that will be in a subsequent release, not in the spring time frame, but a later time, hopefully next year. Sure.
So V1 will be client only, not web?
That is correct. V1 will be client only. However, you will have the ability to export to a video, which can then be posted to wherever you want, embedded in a web page or things of that nature. So the question was, is it the VEE map control? So the answer to that is no. It's a brand new control that was built from the ground up with these scenarios in mind. Okay. Other questions? Sure.
Will there be any licensing issues
with this? So the question is, will there be any licensing issues with this? Hopefully no. As I mentioned in my prior screen, this will be available in the Pro Plus SKU of Office 2013. Where's my clicker? Let me go back one. This will be available in the Pro Plus SKU of Office 2013 or Office 365 subscription. Once you have those applications, this is a free add-in. And all the licensing is taken care of for you. So there's no pay-as-you-go type model in that regard. All right. Sure. Yep, so the question is, any plans to include hierarchies? In V1, most likely not for the spring time frame. However, again, because we're built on the X-Velocity engine, which already supports hierarchies and things of that nature, we definitely want to expose that capability. Other questions? Great. Well, thank you very much for your time. Enjoy the rest of the show. I really appreciate it. And please fill out the survey.